You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, Thanksgiving week. My pleasure to be with you. No show this past Friday, you probably noticed. Well, I hope you noticed. Some technical difficulties here at Breadbox Media, but we think we all got them straightened out. A little bit of spit, duct tape, all the rest. We should be good to go. So, looking forward to spending this Monday with you. Short week coming at you. And hope you're already getting an appetite together for that Thanksgiving feast, which is always good. Carve the roast beast and all that. My guest in the second hour, Chelsea Zimmerman, will be with us, our monthly guest. She holds forth at her blog, reflectionsofaparalytic.com. She's also the editor-in-chief of catholiclane.com. She, the name of the blog, obviously, from her own situation, being having a spinal cord accident when she was in college, spinal cord injury through a car accident. She is passionate about a lot of things, particularly bioethical issues, and so she usually keeps us abreast of those sort of things, and which are important issues because oftentimes our science gets ahead of our ethics, and it's important to continually reflect on where we're going and whether we, because we can do something, whether we should. We'll also talk a little bit about, I think, a really thoughtful piece she wrote a couple of years ago on the apostolate of suffering, sometimes something we don't think of much when it comes to evangelization. So she'll give us a sort of caveat emptor on today's show, let the buyer beware, on the rising fad of genetic testing. It's all the rage. What's not to love? Well, she'll tell us, and also an update on gene editing. We'll also talk about closing the doors of mercy, which the Holy Father did this just yesterday, the Feast of the Solemnity of Christ the King. We'll also talk about the very idea of the church, whether Trump's critics are indeed crying wolf and life is an unscripted movie. All that and more, certainly, if you want to be a part of the program today. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. I'd ask you to keep my wife, Angie, in your prayers. She has the flu, so she's home, has been in bed, really, for the last 2 days and just feeling miserable. So if you could, say a prayer for her and for her healing and for all those who are suffering. Again, 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to call, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Yeah, I said yesterday the Holy Father ceremonially closed the door of mercy during this year of mercy, the year of mercy, this Jubilee year, coming to a close, reported in Crux now. Closing year of mercy, Francis says, God has no memory of sin. The Holy Father words Pope Francis, even if the holy door closes, the true door of mercy, which is the heart of Christ, always remains open for us. We were joking a little bit last week, I was with John Allen, you know, we're gonna close the doors of mercy in the year of mercy and inaugurate the year of harsh judgment. No, but of course, you know, all these things that the church does, their particular sign, it's the way God, as the great third grade school teacher, uses object lessons to reinforce realities. And of course, the church as the universal sacrament of salvation, as the mediator, small m, of Christ's grace in the world, Christ who is the one mediator, capital M, right, has an authority, particularly through the succession of apostles down through the centuries, In terms of Jubilee years of mercy like this, the Holy Father making clear that even though the true door of mercy is closed, or that the holy door is closing, the true door of mercy never does. He goes on to say, God has no memory of sin, but only of us, of each of us, we who are his beloved children. But I was thinking about this yesterday, about this closing of the holy door, and why, in a sense, it is an important thing. Particularly as we are at the end of this liturgical year. I think it's only fitting, of course, Christ, who is the King of Mercy, that it's on this day that we're talking about doors of mercy. Christ, whose kingship presents itself in a much different way than earthly powers and principalities do. It just does. I'm reminded of what Donald Trump said one time, and he'll probably never live it down, his comment about John McCain. You know, I like people who didn't get caught denigrating McCain's credibility as a POW because he got caught. And that's much how the Trump campaign, I'm hoping that his presidency will not continue that pattern of branding winners and losers and all the rest, because, you know, we worship a crucified Savior. By that criterion, Jesus is a loser. I like those who don't get crucified. Well, at the heart of our faith is a king who hung bloody and naked on a cross with a sign above him that said, "This is the King of the Jews." It's really an upside down sort of thing. It's, as I said, exactly the opposite of how earthly powers consider themselves. And of course, with that beautiful passage in yesterday's gospel reading from the Gospel of Luke, as the two criminals were hanging there on either side of Jesus, Luke, the only one who records this dialogue, one of the criminals hanging there reviling Jesus, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." The other, however, rebuking him, said in reply, "Have you no fear of God? For you are subject to the same condemnation. And indeed, we have been condemned justly, for the sentence we received corresponds to our crimes, but this man has done nothing criminal." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." I talked about this with Lavinia Spirito on our weekend show, Unpacking the Gospel. Check it out sometime. We look at the readings for the week, the gospel readings, and we particularly the gospel reading, and we unpack it as best we can. But as I said, and has been observed, of course, this statement from the dying criminal, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom," is one of the great statements of faith you'll find in all the pages of Scripture. Because think about what he was looking at. He was looking at a man who was being crushed under Caesar's thumb, a man who was being nailed to a cross in a very public exhibition and deterrent to would-be rebels, would-be usurpers of the empire's throne. "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." What kingdom are you talking about? It really was a remarkable statement of faith. And of course, Jesus says, "Amen, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." But it's an interesting juxtaposition. These two criminals, one rejecting the mercy flowing forth from the crucified man, the other embracing it. And this is what brings me back around to this whole issue of closing the holy door of mercy, the end of this year of mercy. It is a reminder to us that our opportunity to embrace this mercy is of limited duration. Most of us walk around with the illusion that our lives will endure forever on this planet, and they won't. There will come a day, and you know the beauty that in which our lives come to an end. If during this end of the liturgical year, we talk about the apocalyptic return of Christ, No one knows the day, no one knows the hour, but chances are we'll face our own apocalypse before our Lord returns in His, and that is our own death, when we will see the truth for what it is. And as C.S. Lewis has remarked, that won't be the time for deciding. That will be the time in which it's revealed what, in fact, through the trajectory of our lives, we have decided. Have we turned as the one criminal, seeing in faith a crucified king in whom our hope of salvation lies, or will we in hardness of heart have formally and finally rejected that mercy which is offered? Because here's the truth about the door of mercy. As the Holy Father said, it's always open. But there does come a point, a reckoning, so to speak, in which the Lord honors our free and final choice. And so when the door of mercy closes, the real door of mercy to us, the tragedy is, honestly, that it's not the Lord who closes it. It's that we who slammed it shut ourselves. As Jesus says in the book of Revelation, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in to him and eat with him and he with me." As has been depicted in painting, there's no knob on the outside. That door has to be opened from within. And while it is today, today is the day of our salvation. Good thing to be reminded of. We'll be back in just a minute with the question of the day. Jesus Christ is King now and forever. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Feast of the Presentation of Mary, a tradition drawn from the apocryphal work, the Proto-Evangelium of James, the first gospel of James, in which Mary, according to tradition, was presented as a young child at the temple. So, Holy Mother of God, pray for us. Today is World Television Day, in a little less of a sacred notation there. Evidently on this date, well, in December 1996, so 20 years ago, the UN General Assembly proclaimed the 21st of November as World Television Day, commemorating the date on which the first World Television Forum was held in 1996. Opposition to this declaration took the form of 11 abstentions to vote on the resolution. So anyway, this being World Television Day, I thought about asking a really philosophical question. Like, do you think television on the whole has made us worse or better as human beings? But as I have learned, you all like simple questions. So simple question is, which television show have you watched the most episodes of in your lifetime? Take some thinking here, right? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. You can also post a response on Facebook or on Twitter. Some of you have chosen to do that. Let's see some of the ones that have been listed so far. Kathy says, Andy Griffith. Yeah, I would say the Andy Griffith Show would definitely probably be up there, at least in my top five. Kim says, MASH. Yeah, I could see that too. Alan says, hard one, very likely the Andy Griffith Show. Christy says, Beverly Hills 90210. That's probably embarrassing. Well, just take that word probably out there, Christy. Yeah, I'll have to think about that one because there's several that come to mind. Certainly Andy Griffith, MASH, Gilligan's Island, and Brady Bunch back in the day when I was a kid. Probably the only thing that gets into that ballpark for me as an adult is Seinfeld, which, you know, they plays just about every night on TBS in the syndication. So, yeah, I've seen a lot of Seinfeld. So those will be my biggest, I think. 573-4BREAD-4, as I said, if you want to chime in, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We didn't have our show on Friday because of our technical difficulties. And so I asked a question of the day on Friday that got a great response. I never know what's going to get a big response. And the mental exercise was, imagine Bill Gates has offered to hire the entertainment for your birthday party. Who do you want? And a lot of you chimed in on that. I'll share the answers to that a little bit later in the program. So I'm pretty funny, I must say. A big weekend in college football, of course. I don't think the 4-team playoff contender situation is looking any clearer. That's for sure. It certainly appears that, you know, Alabama's a lock. Even if Alabama loses to Auburn in the Iron Bowl, as long as they win the SEC championship game, or if they beat Auburn, what a strange thing that will be, that they could actually lose the SEC championship game and still pretty much be a lock for the playoff because they're the only undefeated team currently that we've got here in the top 25. And then you've got Ohio State. Now that's and you've got a little bit of an interesting situation brewing in the Big Ten, right? Because Ohio State's sitting there at 10-1. Michigan is number 3 in the rankings here, also at 10-1. And they play each other this Saturday. It's going to be one of the most anticipated. I guess a few years ago it was a big game too. But this is going to be, in the words of our president-elect, huge. Ohio State, Michigan. Ohio State wins. Here's the sort of kicker. They very likely do not go to the Big Ten championship game because they'll be tied with Penn State, who will have the tiebreaker over them since they beat them. That's Ohio State's one loss. Michigan wins. They're into the Big Ten championship game. Very likely playing Wisconsin. Wisconsin, who's hovering back there, at least in this week's rankings. These aren't the playoff rankings, but the overall rankings. They're ranked 5th. My guess is if the teams that control their own destiny, probably all of them, you know, if Ohio State wins, I think they're probably pretty much a lock to make the Final Four, even if they don't make the Big Ten championship game. And then I think your winner of Penn State, Wisconsin, could very well find themselves as a second Big Ten entry into the championship, the semifinals. And then Clemson, as long as they win out, they're in good shape. So that, to me, that makes the most sense. You know, I know you're going to have two teams from the Big 10, 11, 12, 13, whatever their number is these days. But I think it's been a strong year for the Big 10, and they would deserve it. So that's where I'm looking at it right now. If you've got a thought, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. No really huge upsets really this weekend. The other news out of college football is word is emanating out of Austin, Texas, that Charlie Strong will be let go by the University of Texas. No shocker there, particularly he was already on thin ice and then losing to Kansas for the first time since 1938 did not help Charlie Strong. And, you know, I don't like it for Charlie Strong. I think he's a class guy, certainly did very well at Louisville. But, you know, as it shows, sometimes success at one school doesn't always translate to another. Be interesting to see where Charlie Strong ends up. He could end up somebody's defensive coordinator or get another shot at a – depends on what he wants to do, I guess. And then let the speculation begin on who's going to go to Texas. Most eyes on Tom Herman
over at Houston, which would probably be a natural fit. So that'll be a lot that shakes itself out this week in college football. NFL-wise, yesterday, Dallas now moving to 9-1. Let me pull up the NFL standings here because Dak Prescott, as I said last week, Tony Romo, tip of the cap to Tony Romo for the way he's dealt with this whole thing, losing his position really to injury, Dak Prescott coming in and really leading the team to really the status of being, I think at this point, the NFC favorite. Tony Romo, gracious enough not to angle for his old job back. So you got Dallas sitting there at 9-1 after a big win over the Ravens yesterday. The Giants, surprising Giants, sitting there at 7-3, have won five straight. Over in the NFC North, Detroit and Minnesota. Minnesota finally getting their mojo back a little bit. Atlanta Falcons leading the NFC South, and my Tampa Bay Buccaneers right behind them. Now, my Tampa Bay Bucs, it's the craziest thing I've seen, honestly. My Tampa Bay Bucs are 5-5. They are 1-4 at home down at the old pirate ship, Raymond James Stadium, and they're 4-1 on the road. How do you explain that? That is one weird recipe of staying in playoff contention. 5-5 now. Maybe they can petition to play all their games on the road. And then the NFC West, we've got the Seahawks sitting there at 7-2-1, and that's who comes to Tampa this week. Oh, joy, we get them at home. And then if you look at the AFC, of course, the Patriots sitting there at 8-2, leading the AFC East. The Dolphins, a surprising 6-4, having won five straight. The AFC North is a dumpster fire. Ravens and Steelers, 5-5, both in the lead. AFC South, you've got the Texans in first place. 6-3, and then out in the AFC West, the Oakland Raiders in first place, all by themselves, thanks to my Tampa Bay Bucs beating the Chiefs. All right, so anyway, a lot of speculation about Green Bay coach Mike McCarthy. Now that the pack is 4-6, couldn't this be hit for him? I don't know. All right, let's go on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. We've got some good ones. By the way, I was noticing my friend Bob McKillop, who's been on the program before, coach at Davidson. His Davidson Wildcats beat Arizona State. Those Sun Devils, we'll have to get him on sometime soon. Think a lot of Coach McKillop for sure. Anyway, thanks again, Alex, for queuing that up there. Go dumb or go home, as we like to say. I want to start with football for just a minute because I was going to talk about this last Friday, but of course we didn't have a show. Coaching decisions I don't get. There we go again. Nice. So we saw it Thursday night, a couple of them. Here are the two things. This was in the Louisville-Houston game. And one for each coach. But I'm just going to put some of these coaching decisions together in one lump. First nominee for the What Were You Thinking? And there are these. Houston had a fourth and a foot. And they have their quarterback in the shotgun. And therefore, they take the ball, the quarterback does, 3 or 4 yards deep in the backfield. And, of course, hands it off to the running back who gets hit and stopped 2 yards short of the first down. Here's something for you, coach. Quarterback sneak. And then the other one was Bobby Petrino for Louisville is down 21 points, 9 minutes to go. They have fourth down and 5 or 6 from their own side of the field. And he punts. Why? Why do you punt down 3 scores with 9 minutes? Anyway, I know these guys make a lot more money than I do, but really? So those are our first nominee. I'll give you the second nominee and the winner when we come back from the break. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, November 21st. Short week. Hope you're getting all your preparations in order for Thanksgiving this Thursday. Man, I was Saturday in my favorite little grocery store, Aldi. I always feel like I'm saving. They probably got me fooled. But if you want to win my business, make me at least think I'm getting a good deal. But, man, Aldi packed on Saturday. People getting ready for Thanksgiving, I guess. Tough weekend for my son's football team. You know, I'm the PA announcer for our local Catholic high school, Lexington Catholic. They lost their playoff game. It's been a tough year injury-wise. Lost two guys the first game on defense, seniors to ACL injuries. Then last week, lost our starting running back to an ACL. And then our starting quarterback, about the second series, I think, got hurt, had to sit out the rest of the game. It was just, you know, and we played a very good team. I mean, certainly hats off to the victors, Louisville Central High School, who will march on. But tough for those seniors, you know. Just a lot of tears shed. But as I told one, you know, there are 32 teams that make the playoffs at your level in high school, 3A here in the state of Kentucky. 31 of them go home disappointed. So, again, doesn't take the sting out, but maybe a little perspective anyway. So, congratulations to them. And then yesterday I got to hang out with some engaged couples all day, teaching them, making them suffer through marriage prep traffic school. No, I think it went pretty well. Anyway, again, my question of the day, it's World Television Day. What is the show that you have watched more than any other, more episodes of over your lifetime? Which television show? Have to do a little thinking there. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. All right, with no further ado, back to our What Were You Thinking nominees. We've been through one, coaches, but we've got more. Like this story right here. Let's see. An investigation is underway. This is in Hopatcong, New Jersey. An investigation is underway into an alleged assault of a bunny-suited prankster blowing an air horn by a borough police officer after video of the incident surfaced online. Kevin Hemerick, age 28, old enough to know better, went to the Hopatcong Police Headquarters on Thursday evening with the intention of turning himself in for an outstanding warrant and to record an air horn prank at the same time. Yeah, that's always a good combo. Turn yourself in for a warrant and play a prank on the police. A video filmed by Jason Hemerick, otherwise known as Tweedledum, posted on Facebook Live and YouTube shows Kevin Hemerick wearing a bunny costume and blowing an air horn over the course of 4 minutes despite being asked to stop. This is inside the police headquarters. Have you ever heard an air horn in a closed space? After blowing the air horn intermittently, two officers then enter the lobby square where the Hemerick brothers were located. Jason Hemerick said the duo began cursing and yelling, and one of them punched his brother in the face. The other, he said, slapped the phone out of his hands. This is what Jason Hemerick had to say. This is my hometown. What are you, Bruce Springsteen? This is my hometown, and he punched my brother in the face for no reason. Well, for no reason? Really? So I'm going to give I'm not a fan of police brutality, but an air horn dressed in a bunny suit, I'm sorry, buddy. You were asking for it, okay? But the winner we're going to give to one of President-elect Trump's key advisors. Carl Higbee. During an appearance on Megyn Kelly's Fox News show Wednesday night, Trump surrogate Carl Higbee
cited one of the most xenophobic episodes in American history as, quote, precedent for the possibility the Trump administration will require Muslim immigrants from certain countries to register in a national database. They say it'll hold constitutional muster, Higby said, referring to the Muslim registry proposal discussed earlier this week by Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach, an advisor to President-elect Trump. I know the ACLU is going to challenge it, but I think it'll pass. We've done it with Iran back a while ago. We did it during World War II with the Japanese, which, call it what you will, may be wrong. Higby's comment drew an instant rebuke from Kelly. Come on, you're not proposing we go back to the days of internment camps, I hope? You know better than to suggest that. That's the kind of stuff that gets people scared, Carl. I'm just saying there's precedent for it. I'm not saying I agree with it. See, here's the thing, right? If you want to quell the feeling that some Americans have that they are now in danger under a Trump presidency, that's not exactly the sort of thing that you cite as an argument for your position. The Japanese internment camps. Really? Really? So kudos to Megyn Kelly for calling that out, but man, that's just wow. You have nothing to fear. Just, you know, I'm kind of citing internment camps as a precedent. So anyway, as I've said before, I don't think that Donald Trump himself is a virulent racist. I do think he sometimes taps into a lot of sort of nativistic fears and exploits them. And I think he surrounds himself sometimes with people who are real nativists. So I think that's the concern. Now, there was an interesting piece that's been kind of making itself around social media called Slate. It's from the website Slate Star Codex. And the name of the article is "You Are Still Crying Wolf." This article by the, pseudonym Scott Alexander, we really don't know the person's name, goes into a very extensive and detailed explanation of why much of the fear associated with Donald Trump is what he calls crying wolf. He says a New York Times article from last September that went viral only recently asks whether Democrats have cried wolf so many times that nobody believes them anymore. Maybe somewhat like folks on the right were so shrill in their continued criticism of President Obama over every little thing that they began to lose credibility and sounded like partisan hacks. Same sort of idea. He says, back in October 2015, I wrote that the picture of Trump as the white power candidate and the first openly white supremacist candidate to have a shot at the presidency in the modern era was overblown. I said that the media narrative that Trump is doing some kind of special appeal to white voters voodoo is unsupported by any polling data. And he goes on to say the votes are in. Trump got greater support from minorities than Romney or McCain before him. Which is interesting, right? Trump made gains among blacks. He made gains among Latinos. He made gains among Asians. The only major racial group where he didn't get a gain of greater than 5% was white people. He says, I want to repeat that. The group where Trump's message resonated least over what we would predict from a generic Republican was the white population. And he said, nor was there some surge in white turnout. He said, by eyeballing what data we have, it looks very much like whites turned out in equal or lesser number this year than in 2012, 28, and so on. So he says, I stick to my thesis from October 2015. There is no evidence that Donald Trump is more racist than any past Republican candidate or any other 70-year-old white guy, for that matter. All this stuff about how he's the candidate of the KKK and the vanguard of a new white supremacist movement is made up. It's a catastrophic distraction, he says, from the dozens of other undeniable problems with Trump that could have convinced voters to abandon him. That it came to dominate the election cycle should be considered a horrifying indictment of our political discourse. In the same way, it would be a horrifying indictment if the entire Republican campaign had been based around the theory that Hillary Clinton was a secret Satanist. Yes, he says, calling Romney a racist was crying wolf, but you are still crying wolf. He said he avoided pushing this point anymore, or has since last October, because he didn't look like he was supporting Trump or somehow accidentally convince anyone else to support him. He says, I think Trump's election is a disaster. He has no plan. He's dangerously trigger happy. And his unilateralism threatens aid to developing countries. He said, I thought and still think a Trump presidency will be a disaster. But since we're past the point where we can prevent it, I want to present my case. So we'll get into this a little bit on the other side of the break, because it's a pretty interesting and, you know, I think a strong argument on some levels. And we'll get into this when we get back from the break, because I think it's worth talking about. Again, my question of the day here on World Television Day. What TV show have you seen the most episodes of any over the course of your life? 573-4BREAD-4 or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We'll be back in just a minute.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
It's before the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this November 21st, Feast of the Presentation of Mary. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death, which, please God, won't be anytime soon. Anyway, our question of the day, what TV show on World Television Day? You didn't know there was such a thing, did you? It's kind of like my mom used to say, you know, when we would have Mother's Day, and I would say, how come there's not a kid's day? And you know what she said, right? Because your mom probably said the same thing. Every day is kid's day. So probably the same thing is true about television. Every day is World Television Day. But which show have you seen the most episodes of? Love to hear from you on that. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. What are some other things on this day, November 21st, throughout the ages? We will do a little look back in history here. We can get Alex to cue up our music. There we go. All right. 164 BC. Do we really know it was on this day, really? Judas Maccabeus of the Hasmonean family restores the temple in Jerusalem. This event, of course, commemorated each year by the Festival of Hanukkah. I know Mel Gibson at one time was talking about making a movie about the Maccabees. Wow, that would be bloody. The story's bloody enough as it is. Throw Mel Gibson in, man. 1920, Stan Musial's birthday, the late Stan the Man. Second most, I think, hits in National League history. Is that right? I'm Pete Rose. 1937, Marlo Thomas was born. That girl is 79 years old today. 1942, on this day, Tweety Bird, a.k.a. Tweety Pie, debuts in The Tale of Two Kitties. Happy birthday to Stephen Curtis Chapman, the American Christian music singer who, probably for most of his life, has been mistaken for a duo. It's not Steve and Curtis Chapman. Stephen Curtis Chapman. Troy Aikman, 50 years old today, former Cowboy quarterback, current TV analyst. Michael Strahan, 45 years old. Talk about a guy who's diversified away from sports. Ken Griffey Jr., 47 today. Back in 1980, Dallas's Who Shot JR episode has a 53.3 rating or 83 million viewers in the U.S. I remember watching that episode.
40 years ago, Rocky debuted in New York City. In 2000, 16 years ago, the Florida Supreme Court granted Democrat Al Gore's request to keep the presidential election recount going. And 15 years ago, a 94-year-old Connecticut woman died of inhalation anthrax, the last of five people killed in the anthrax attacks. Man, that was a scary time in the U.S., wasn't it? Anyway, all right, so back to this article. And I'll post a link to it on the show's Facebook page. Again, by the pseudonym Scott Alexander on the blog Slate Star Codex. He says, "You are still crying wolf." He's talking about how, you know, those on the left for so long have accused Republicans of being racists and anti-Semites and all the rest, that over time it becomes like crying wolf. And he says, even with Donald Trump, it's the same situation. That Donald Trump, and he goes on, he says he didn't vote for Trump. In fact, he's, as I'll tell you in just a few minutes, very critical of some other issues with Donald Trump. But basically thinks there's a lot of unneeded hysteria right now. And he goes on making his case. And, you know, I think he does actually a pretty thorough job of it in many ways. Basically, one of the things it comes down to is that, yes, Trump, you know, the question is asked, is Trump getting a lot of his support from white supremacist organizations? And he writes, no, because there are not enough organized white supremacists to make up a lot of anyone's support. As of 2016, the Anti-Defamation League put total Klan membership nationwide at around 3,000. As he writes, the KKK is really small. They could all stay in the same hotel with a bunch of free rooms left over. Or put another way, the entire membership of the KKK is less than the daily readership of this blog. If you Google Trump KKK, you get 14.8 million results. He said, even if they're, even if Google is inflating the number by 1,000 times, and there were only about 14,000 news articles about the supposed Trump KKK connection, there are still 2 to 3 articles about a Trump KKK connection for every single Klansman in the world. I mean, I guess the rebut to that would be, well, but, you know, it doesn't take many who, want to commit an act of violence. And anyway, the question is, you know, does Trump speak to them in a particular way? He also makes the same point basically about white nationalists and the alt-right. There just aren't enough of them to really make a difference. Number three, he deals with the point, is Trump getting a lot of his support from people who wouldn't join white nationalist groups, aren't in the online alt-right, but still privately hold some kind of white supremacist position? As the blog says, there are surprisingly few polls that just straight out ask a representative sample of the population, are you white, a white supremacist? He said, I can find a couple of polls that sort of get at this question in useful ways. Now, here was an interesting poll. This is a Gallup poll. There were two statements, and people were asked whether they agree or disagree. The statements were, the questions were, do you think black and white students should go to separate schools? And would you move if a black family moved in next door? This poll question asked of white Americans and has been asked by Gallup since the early 1940s. Now, here was what was stunning to me. That first question about black and white students should go to separate schools. This question has been asked since the early 40s. In the early 40s, among white Americans, the percentage who said that black and white students should go to separate schools was over 70%. Over 70%. So, you know, when we start talking about making America great again, for example, as I've said before, you got to be really careful with that because, yes, there are things that are worse now than they were in 1941 or 42, whenever this poll was taken. But there are also some things that are much better now. Same question asked today of white Americans, or at least the most recent one I've seen here, 1995, was about less than 5%. Less than 5. So you've gone from 70% to around 5% or less. And I think it's trending downward. The other question that has been asked since the late 1950s, would you move if a black family moved in next door? In the mid-1950s, or about 1957 or 8, almost 50% of white Americans said they would move if a black family moved in next door. Now, that percentage is about, from what I can look at the graph here, about 2%. 2%. So there's definitely a significant downward slope on those two questions. It's fascinating. Fascinating that that many thought that, and fascinating that so few do now. And so I'm going to post a link to this so you can read it in greater detail. And his concern is, honestly, as a psychologist, he's really concerned with the effect that all this talk is going to have on people. He said, I work in mental health. I've had two patients express Trump-related suicide ideation. One of them ended up in a nursing home. Emergency room, sorry. Although luckily both of them are now safe and well. So here's what he says, though. I thought this was interesting because this guy, as I said, does not vote for Trump. He goes through all these different things, responses to his argument. He says, but didn't Trump ... He says, whatever bizarre, divisive, ill-advised, and revolting thing you're about to mention, the answer is probably yes. This is equally true on race-related and non-race-related issues. People ask, how could Trump believe the wacky conspiracy theory that Obama was born in Kenya if he wasn't racist? I don't know, Alexander writes. How could Trump believe the wacky conspiracy theory that vaccines cause autism? How could Trump believe the wacky conspiracy theory that the Clintons killed Vince Foster, or the wacky conspiracy theory that Ted Cruz's father shot JFK? He says Trump will apparently believe anything for any reason, especially about his political opponents. If Clinton had been black but Obama white, we'd be hearing that the Vince Foster conspiracy theory proves Trump's bigotry and the birtherism was just harmless wackiness. How could Trump insult a Mexican judge for just being Mexican? I don't know. Or insult a disabled reporter for just being disabled? I don't know. Or insult John McCain just for being a beloved war hero? He says, I don't think people appreciate how weird this guy is. He has a weird way of speaking. His catchphrases like haters and losers are sad. His tendency to avoid reasonable questions in favor of meandering tangents. The ability to bait him into saying basically anything just by telling him people who don't like him think he shouldn't. I mean, I'm going to post this pretty good article, I have to say. 573-4BREAD-4. We got a new hour coming up. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you are listening to Breadbox Media.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.